CXU News time is 9:08. This is Southern U Talk with me, Dale Desmond, and with our monthly visits with Dr. David Blodgett in studio from the Southwest Public Health Department. I say it right. I get it right. Is that close enough?
Yes, close enough. Good.
All right. He is Dr. David Blodgett. You know what's funny? I've been doing this for almost a month now. Right. I think you were one of the first guests when I first started, cross training with Andy. And it's like my first trip around the sun. I've kind of experienced all the stuff and, I'm feeling like I'm settling in, I'm feeling good. So, whenever you come in, I feel like that's going to be like, okay, that's the reset of the cycle.
It's another month down.
Exactly. Another month that I haven't gotten fired yet. And we were just chatting offline about how I have a tendency, working in music radio as long as I did. I actually started in news radio way back in the late 90s. And did music radio for a long time, so I got into goofing off on stuff. And there's just some stuff you have to be serious about. Like yesterday, yeah. we had a fatality over by the hospital. You just gotta lock in and not be goofing off about stuff. But we try to have some fun even.
Well, you gotta be able to laugh at yourself sometimes.
They say laughter is the best medicine.
That's right.
And we're gonna get into some of that. He's Dr. David Blodgett, Southwest Public Health Department, Southwest Utah Public Health. What's the actual term?
Southwest Utah Public Health Department.
Okay.
Is the correct terminology.
I wrote it down.
Which makes it even less user-friendly.
I didn't write Utah on there. All right. So let's jump right in to the topic, really, that's got to be A1 plus in your office with the measles outbreak. How things are looking, how things are trending, and really the concentration here in southern Utah and southwest Utah and in the five county area. I'm just surprised with a higher population up north that it's not more concentrated there. And that's why it's kind of a weird thing. Talk about that. How we're trending and then the concentration here in southern Utah.
Well, it's all about vaccination, right? And so if you're not vaccinated, you get sick with measles. It's just the way it works.
That's simple.
So we have a particular group down here that just isn't vaccinated, and it's running through them regularly. And so,
okay.
So it's not that it's concentrated down here any differently than anywhere else. It's just in that particular group.
Community.
That community that is not vaccinated.
Got it.
So, and the cases you see throughout the rest of the state are actually tied into that particular outbreak.
Okay.
So go visit your friends, go stay with people. They're not vaccinated too. They get sick as well. So
I wonder how soon it'll end up being. I remember when COVID, it was almost like, show me your COVID card. Like my uncle, my mom passed away in 2020, not from COVID, but in New York, and I had to fly back to take care of all that stuff, and my uncle had to get together, and I literally had to show a card at his house at the door to go to my uncle's house to have a family gathering. Are we going to reach that, do you think, here in southern Utah?
I don't know.
Yeah.
The camps are clearly drawn. There's those that want to get vaccinated and those that don't, and never the twain shall meet.
Yeah.
I don't know how it can be any more clear.
Yeah,
you don't get measles if you're vaccinated. If you're not vaccinated, you're going to get measles, and it's a miserable disease, right? People get hospitalized, they're sick for quite a while. It's just miserable. And so
this could be a really short hour, right? Just get vaccinated. All right, thanks, Dave. Thanks for stopping by. Have a good day.
I just don't have anything else to say. It spreads incredibly easy. If you get exposed, you're going to get sick.
Yeah.
It's just the way it works.
Okay.
So I can't fix that. Right.
It can't be more clear than that. All right, if you have questions for Dr. David Blodgett, the Southwest Utah Public Health Department, 435-261-4540, the number to text in, or you can call in our regular call line, 673-5890. Now, there is a small, very small number of people that have been vaccinated that have contracted the disease. Less than, I think I talked to Dave Heaton this morning, less than like 5%, less than 3%. I don't know, whatever it is. Very small number that have been vaccinated. What is that what are those symptoms like? Are they just like, regular measles symptoms? Is it something that it's like a little scratch in the throat, you're not fine? What's that look like?
Yeah, it tends to be much less dramatic, right? Okay. So if you get measles, you're unvaccinated, then you get the full scope. You get high fever, cough, the rash comes, conjunctivitis, complex spots in your mouth and sore throat where you can't breathe. About a probably 10% chance of going to the hospital, 1 in 1,000 die kind of thing, right? And then when you're vaccinated, maybe they get a few spots from the rash. Yeah. Maybe they have a little bit of a fever kind of thing. It's just a whole different disease. So there was, we haven't ever seen a death in somebody that's been vaccinated. Just doesn't happen.
Ever. Okay. That was one of my next questions was, how lethal does it end up being? What if somebody realizes or they've read something, they hear this on KDXU, they go, gosh, Dr. Blodgett got me convinced. I want to get vaccinated, or I want my kids to get vaccinated. It's just as simple. What does it look like even as an adult now? I know there's some time period between the two shots. You get one when you're a year old, and then one when you're 5 or 6. What does that look like?
Right.
The vaccination look like after the typical vaccination periods when you're younger?
So the recommendation is still 2 shots, 90% effective with 1 shot, 2 shots, 97% effective, at least a month gap in between. So even just getting the 1 shot, we consider you vaccinated and you can move on. So it's pretty easy, but...
It's 2 months difference, you said?
A month,
okay.
Yeah.
It gives them a chance to get...
2 months would probably be better, 3 months would be... it's just as long as there's at least a month in there, but that it contributes to the immunogenicity of the vaccine.
Gotcha.
So we don't have a more effective vaccine. It's been around since the 50s.
Right.
It's incredibly safe and effective. It's just been, the virus itself isn't like a flu that changes every year, so you have to keep getting vaccinated.
Right.
It's the same vaccine it's been since the 50s, and it still works.
Mass-producing.
If you got measles before the vaccine, or if you got the shots now, it's just incredibly effective. So,
what's the vaccine that folks in, 50, 60 plus has like a hole in their arm kind of a thing? Yeah. All my uncles and aunts have it.
Yeah, so that was smallpox.
Okay.
So
way back in the day.
That was done through a process they call scarification, where they just put it just under the surface of the skin, and that would create a really good immunity too. So smallpox itself, we used to kill a third of the people that got it.
Wow.
One in three. And it was crazy.
Yeah.
How deadly that disease was, no longer present on the planet.
Love that. Eradicated.
Yeah, because of a big vaccine campaign. I finished up in 1978, something like that, where
Love
the
it.
Last case was, and just don't see it. So you don't. I actually was in that last cohort that got that, so I got vaccinated for smallpox way back in the day.
When you're just a baby doctor.
when I was 6 months, getting started on things. But it's an interesting debate we're having as a society in social media, and the middle ground has been lost, right? It's people are lined up in their camps and they're not going to listen to anything else besides what is there for them and whatever their side is telling them.
Yeah.
And it's kind of sad to think about some of these diseases coming back,
Yeah, polio. I want to talk about polio a little bit later on.
Let's let polio come back and see how people like that, or diphtheria, tetanus. Oh my goodness,
so. For real. I mean, just all these things, mumps, rubella, these things. What is the biggest pushback? What do people say? Is it a blanket? I don't trust vaccines. It's control, blah, blah, blah. Or is it, I'll get a vaccine for all these other things, but I'm just skipping measles or is it just a blanket? Like people that aren't vaccinated for measles aren't vaccinated for anything. And what is that big pushback? What is their...
I think that's mostly what it is. And we had a highly vaccinated population right up until COVID. Mm. So we had about a 3-4% exemption rate for the kids going to school. And we just, as in general, it was recognized that vaccines were a good thing. But then COVID hits you can say what you want about politics and what happened there, but that one of the offshoots of that was just a general distaste and moving away from the idea of getting vaccinated for anything.
Right? Yeah, so, it's kind of a collateral damage thing.
Yeah, well, and now we're going to have there's all these kids that have been born since COVID now that are not vaccinated, right? So we'll see these diseases circulate in those kids going forward. Particularly in a respiratory tract infection like measles and flu and stuff, we just don't have any other weapons against it.
Yeah.
Right? You're either vaccinated or you're not. Some of the traditional public health measures where you say, okay, this is the person that has this disease, and then we look at everybody around them and see who might have been infected and try and help out. Measles moves so fast, it's already into the fourth layer before you even know they have measles, and so it just doesn't work.
That's astounding at this point in life. All right, phone lines 673-5890. You can text in at 435-261-4540. Good to take a call real quick?
Yeah, if you'd like to.
All right. Good morning, not so much afternoon. Good morning, you're on the air on KDXU. Who's this?
Richard.
Richard, what do you got? You got a question for Dr. Dave?
I got a couple. First off, the measles. That's pretty much, like you said, was under control until the non-vaxxers got it. But when you let in how many millions of people cross their border and we don't check their health records, how big an impact is that to this country?
It's definitely a factor. It's not a factor in measles so far. We haven't seen that, but it is in other diseases. Yeah.
Bringing them in. Okay. Yeah, another question, Richard.
Okay. I'm an old fart.
Okay.
Old farts get shingles, or that's at least what the TV ads say. Now, is this shot super effective, or can you, because I've had shingles before, but I guess that doesn't build any immunity. It was just this light case. So is the shot worth it, or we're sixes?
Yeah,
Thanks, Richard.
So, it's a good question. Shingles, I don't know if most people know this, but shingles is actually chickenpox coming back, right?
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
So because of the ubiquity of chickenpox, we all have this time bomb waiting in us to come out when we get immune compromised or we have some event that kind of triggers it. And it's painful, neuropathic, neurogenic pain from inside the nerve. So the virus hides out in your nerves and then it activates, it starts breaking out and it comes from within the nerves, and so
it's way worse than when you were a kid and got chicken pox like we all got back in the 80s.
Right.
And maybe we've even been a part of it, these stories where somebody's you hear, hey, Bonnie's kids down the street, they've got chicken pox, be like, oh, bring the kids over, let them all play together. Around a lollipop.
Chicken pox party,
right. Everybody pass around a lollipop. I don't know, whatever. That's disgusting. But is that something that the health department goes, we don't say yes or no on it, but it's can be effective.
Yeah.
Or just go get a chicken pox vaccine and call it a day.
Yeah, we that's not something you want to do. You don't deliberately go after a disease. It happens. Let me answer the question our caller had.
Okay, Richard,
first,
yeah.
Before I get into that. But, so I think the short answer is, so about 10% of people will get shingles.
Okay.
Right, which is fairly significant, right? And I think it really comes down to what do you what do you think your risk is? And, mm-hmm. and then about 10% of those 10% will get a second round, right?
So get it again, you mean?
There is some natural immunity, but not as much as the vaccine provides. Vaccine's highly effective in that kind of 90, 92 or 3% range with two shots. It is one that people complain about the side effect of. It feels like you got kicked by a horse.
Okay.
Right? Your arm feels like it's going to fall off. It's very aggressive.
It's like tetanus
response.
Or whatever.
And, And so it there is that side to that. So it's not as big of a no-brainer as some of them are.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's not something that you're guaranteed to get. It is something when you get it, it's no fun, right?
Yeah.
And sometimes people can keep it for a very long time, right? So that post-herpetic neuralgia, they call it, it just stays for years. And I've seen people get it in their eyes and they go blind.
Yeah, or, no, I've seen it.
It's
yeah.
just, so I in my mind, am I going to get it? Yeah. When I'm 65, I'm going to do it. But I don't. And it's effective at what you want it to do. It's just, I think it's one of those things you kind of weigh out and say, well, you know, am I healthy? Do I want to, I don't know. There isn't a lot of downsides other than people say, man, my arm was sore for a few days.
Right. It's right. You get through it. It's just the same as your brother-in-law hitting you in the arm. So what is the chicken pox? What's the standard on it? You get a shot when you're a kid. Is there a booster you're supposed to get later on to prevent shingles, or does the chicken pox you get the vaccine when you're a kid, does that prevent shingles later on, or is it just kind of a coin toss, or how does that work?
I don't think we know the true answer to that yet.
Okay.
The thought is we probably won't, right? Because you're vaccinated against chicken pox, that means it doesn't have a chance to set in, be latent in your nerves, and then pop out later. That's the hope. And I think the data is beginning to bear out that generation is just not going to have to deal with shingles if they've been vaccinated for chickenpox. So.
Is that something that we see being eradicated, chickenpox someday? Can it be like smallpox at some point?
Yeah. It's possible because it's a human unique disease. So the only things that are eligible for eradication are diseases that only occur in humans. And the list of those is not very high, you know, believe it or not. Measles is one of them. Smallpox, polio, chickenpox. So that's the good news. The bad news is you still have to have everybody vaccinated. And there's a lot of places in the world that just don't vaccinate for measles, chickenpox,
polio, all that stuff. Yeah,
polio, we're trying. We're getting really close to eradicating polio.
I know. I'm a member of the Rotary Club. It's our big thing. I know how that goes.
Yeah.
I know how that goes. One more quick question for you on the measles. When it comes to school, I remember back when I was, I won't say I was in junior high, maybe ninth grade, I actually got quote unquote suspended from school because my vaccines weren't up to date. Is that something they still do post COVID, where if your kids are going to public school, will they actually disallow you from coming to school if you're not vaccinated on certain things?
The possibility is still there.
Yeah.
It's still in code that if you're not vaccinated, then you need to be out of school while that disease is present in the school. The measles outbreak has laid bare something that is a little difficult to know, right? Do you just exclude every kid in the school for the whole school year? And the answer is no, I don't, you know, it's not fair either. And so what we've been doing is we'll notify a school if there's a case of measles in a school. The school will send a letter recommending that kids that are not vaccinated stay home, but not enforcing that. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
There's no guards to escort you out of school or anything like that.
Well, yeah, I remember my mom saying, you can't go to school today. We have to go get the shot. And I was like, this is awesome.
Yeah.
Can I give this tomorrow? How about the next day?
Well, and that's the offer, is get vaccinated. And then, you know, none of this is part of it, but, they're just not. So the because the incubation period for measles is 21 days mm-hmm. from every time there's an exposure in the school, in theory, you'd have to have every kid that's not vaccinated in the school out for 21 days. And
that's a lot.
That's a pretty high price to pay.
So. Yeah. Yeah. All right. He is Dr. David Blodgett. Phone lines are open 673-5890. You can text in here if you're on the road, you're doing whatever, 435-261-4540. Love to hear your thoughts on that. Coming back after the break, we're going to get into the magazine coming out. The Health Department magazine comes out 3 times a year.
Right.
And we're getting ready to put one out. And when I say we, I mean you. And we're going to dig into what's going to be in the magazine. Coming up here in a few minutes, KDXU News Time, 928. This is Southern U Talk with Dale Desmond. You have to let that rock and roll. All right, 931 here on Southern U Talk. News Radio 890, 92.5 and 106.1, KDXU. It is Dr. David Blodgett in studio with the Southwest Utah Public Health Department for his monthly visit. We'll get back into some flu shot stuff here in a little bit, but I want to talk about, maybe you're going to cover it, in the 3 times a year, what do you call that? You have a biannual, you've got a quadannual, what is that, a triannual?
Triannual.
The triannual. We're going to do more than try and put out a magazine. We're going to do it, dang it.
That's great.
You've got the triannual. I've seen it come in the mailbox, magazine, get ready to come out. What are we highlighting in this? What are some of the things people can expect to read when they get it out of the mailbox?
So we've traditionally, in years past, we did our issues based around a bunch of topics, and we kind of hit issues that were big in the. We went to the idea a couple of years ago where we started doing one issue a year focused on one topic.
Yeah.
So we could do a deep dive into that one topic. And so this is one of those one issue topics. It'll be a reprisal, an update, a revised, new and improved version of our Sleep magazine from 5 years ago.
Oh.
So I think, and you know, Andy and I talked about this some, but sleep is a majorly misunderstood and underutilized aspect of health that we're just not doing a good job of in society. And so we want to double down on the message that sleep is important and you can do things to help your sleep. So,
and imagine, and I've heard this before, and you can let me know if I'm up in the night, literally, that your health, that your sleep really affects your health, kind of like dental health does, where your dental health, if it's bad, it really affects your other physical health and things like that.
It's absolutely true. And so my article in that magazine, I always, you know, we have a committee, we make sure we have a bunch of topics, and then I always write an article or two, and the article I put into this magazine is showing how sleep impacts the top 10 causes of disease and death in our community.
So
that's the series of articles I've been writing, is taking each of those top 10 causes of death and breaking them down and what we can do. And so this is a reverse, showing that sleep impacts all of those top 10 causes of death and makes them significantly worse.
So are there new findings in this different research? I know you're kind of revisiting some of this, but is there new findings that have been updated? I know in these medical journals, you'd think that, you know, we would have all the answers. And here's all the answers, but our bodies and our genomes and these diseases continue to evolve. And so there's always something new in the medical industry. What are we finding that's new here?
Well, I don't know if you want to call it new. I think what we wanted to do with this is go a little deeper into
just how
does sleep impact your health? Just how do you go about approaching this? Where are more resources you can do and things like that? The science is continuing to evolve, but it's more just confirming and reconfirming and showing more and more interactions with how health is impacted by sleep. So, for example, there was a study that just came out recently where they said, well, okay, if you get sleep, that lowers your blood pressure. And if you exercise, that lowers your blood pressure.
Okay.
What happens if you sleep and exercise, right? and so.
Imagine that.
So.
What if you drink water and eat healthy? This is crazy.
How do you combine those? But the surprising finding of that was not that that was synergistic, which it was. So about a 70% reduction in blood pressure when you sleep and exercise. But what they showed was that if you don't sleep and you exercise, you actually end up worse off
than
if you don't exercise. Because sleep negated the positive impact.
Okay.
Not sleeping negated the impact, the positive impact of exercise. So so there's some of that that I think really helps. I think we have a real problem in our society of understanding that we need to be doing something and internalizing it and making it part of it.
Okay, yeah.
And I think that's what we're really saying is we want to encourage people to be really very intentional about how they approach sleep. So sleep isn't a luxury that you get to after everything else is done and, you know, which is the way I used to approach sleep before I started studying this.
And something
I think that's a really common attitude.
Yeah.
And what I'm trying to say is that can't be the way you approach this because if you're not sleeping, the rest of the stuff doesn't really help you, right?
Yeah.
You know, maybe you're eating right. Maybe you're doing your 10,000 steps a day. Maybe you're drinking water. But what the studies are saying is sleep's the core of that. If you don't sleep, then the rest of it doesn't work, right? And so prioritizing sleep and saying, you know what, that's a non-negotiable part of this is I have to build sleep into what I do and I have to be intentional about that, I think is something that most people have not done in their lives.
There's people out there, and I'm one of them, that I seem to be able to get by on 5 hours of sleep a day. Five, maybe six. If I'm in bed longer than 6 hours, I can't. Like if I go to bed, I get up at about 4:30 every day to come and do the show. If I go to bed at 8 o'clock, I will be wide awake at 2.
Yeah.
Just is that something that can be fixed? Is that something that you can that I can go? I just keep doing it, and you'll. Or is there a way to fix that, or how? What is the standard for the average human?
So
for health.
So the standard is 7 hours.
Okay,
at least 7 or 8
in one night, not two.
Yeah.
Okay, just saying,
not two. There is this really strange group that they found that has this genetic mutation that where they say, you know, it looks like for them 6 hours is probably okay, but for nobody is 5 hours
okay.
And it's like 0.1% of the population, so
yeah,
it's probably not you, right?
Yeah, so, yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it could be. And I used to say that to you all. If I get 5 hours, I'm okay.
I feel good, right? I can function. I'm tough. But I am strong. I've got stuff to do. I've got sleep is just an inconvenience that I have to do.
I'll sleep when I'm dead, right?
Right.
But I'm here to tell you when you finally do start getting regular good sleep and you realize, man, I was not doing myself any service.
No, you're right. It's
and some of that is permanent. It's really hard to. I actually read a researcher just recently that said, you know, I don't think we can fix the bad training that people have had throughout their lives to not get good sleep. I want to challenge that notion because I think everybody can change, but I do think it's an uphill battle for people to say, you know what, I'm gonna have to change my approach here. I'm gonna have to really say, sleeping is important to me individually, not just in general, not just what your mom used to tell you when you were a kid.
Right.
It's, I've got to take this seriously. Now we find that about all behavioral change. It doesn't really happen until somebody says, you know what? I get it.
Yeah.
It's got to be me.
I've got to make I have to make the grassroots effort. It was that old joke about how when you're a kid, you're forced to sleep. Then when you're an adult, you're like, thank goodness. I get to do this on my own.
Can I have a nap?
Why did I fight this so bad when I was a kid? And so this is all covered in the new magazine coming out. It's the tri-annual. What's it called?
Health Magazine.
Okay.
Health Magazine. So it's published by the Southwest Utah Public Health Foundation.
Awesome.
Which is affiliated with the health departments, really. We use it to do get a nonprofit status. So
yeah.
It's cheaper mailing and all that stuff. So, but the foundation's mission is to, you know, help provide information to the public. And so the health department partners with that. It's now on its, what, ninth year of the Best of State Award in our category.
All right.
For a governmental magazine produced.
Very nice.
As far as we can tell, the only magazine of its kind in the nation. So we're excited.
That's fantastic. And do you guys do, I was a president of the Rotary Foundation twice here in St. George. What do you guys do? Fundraisers? Do you a gala? What's the, how do you fund this? Is it just coming from, how does that work?
Most of the time, grants we receive, like from the feds and stuff, have a component where they require some sort of outreach to the community.
Okay.
So we can take those monies and use it to do the magazine.
Good.
So
there's no gala. I have to go get a tuxedo.
No, you know, we approached all that stuff and then, you know, public health just isn't all that cool to come out to a gala.
I disagree. I disagree, man. I think it would be super easy for you guys to get a bunch of doctors together, you know, have an open bar, and the money just flows. Doc, the money, I've seen it.
Okay.
I've emceed these things. I know.
I'll give it a shot.
You call me. I'll emcee this thing. We will squeeze these guys. I know I've seen their houses out in Little Valley. They can absolutely afford to do this.
Yeah.
So there's the sleep article in the magazine coming out. What else was there?
The whole magazine.
It's about sleep. It's
various
the sleep
aspects
article.
Of sleep. Where can you get more resources? Given suggestions on how to do it. A pretty comprehensive look at this concept called CBTI, cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia. So when you tell me that you can't sleep longer than a certain amount, that's
okay.
Because you've trained your brain that way.
Okay,
right?
And there's a way to untrain.
So how do you get your brain to say, you know what, it's okay to go a little bit longer.
Yeah.
I don't have to get up at this time or whatever. And so there's concepts like going to bed and getting up at the same time every day,
mm-hmm.
you know, making sure you don't, if you're laying awake in bed and your mind's racing, that you don't just lay there and let your brain think this is my thinking time
when
I'm in bed. You get back up and you go do something else until you're tired and come
back.
Go
get a bowl of Cheerios, come back to bed.
There's just all these great suggestions that are fairly intuitive and you're like, well, duh, but then you do them. You got to do them, right? And so every time I speak about this, I always have people come afterwards. Oh, I do all the things you're talking about and it just really hasn't happened. You know, help me. And so I just ask them, well, what? Have you done this?
Yeah.
Well, yeah. That, no.
Well,
I don't do
I'm
that.
I'm gonna
do
start
that.
Tomorrow.
I don't cut out caffeine because that's a big one. Right?
Well, of course.
So they want to claim they've done it all, but they really haven't.
Right. I've done one or two things.
I know. People are really desperate for sleep sometimes, right? They recognize.
Yeah.
And so I really hope this will be a helpful resource for people.
I think a lot of it really has to do with balance in your life overall, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you just talked about it. A diet, exercise, water consumption, and doing all those things at the right time. I mean, if you're drinking a gallon of water an hour before you go to bed, you're not going to sleep very well.
That's right.
You're going to be up trotting down the hall twice a night at least.
Well, and I'm trying to get away from the idea that somehow people tend to be really focused on their thing that they think is their health venue, right?
Yeah.
So I run marathons, right? I eat terrible. I don't sleep. I don't do anything else, but I run marathons. That
right.
Makes me healthy. And that doesn't help you. There's this moderation doesn't rule your life. You don't have to chart out every second of your day to do that, but do a little bit better in a number of areas, and you really makes a big impact on things. So.
That's fantastic. We're watching for it. When does it come out again?
We're hoping early February.
All right. So coming up in about a month or so, watch for that.
Yeah.
The award-winning magazine. We're looking forward to it. All right. He's Dr. David Blodgett in the studio for one more segment. We're going to talk about flu vaccines. We're going to talk about RSV rearing its ugly head. We'll get to that coming up after the break. 9:45. This is Southern U Talk on KDXU. Red Hot. All right, 9:47, Southern U Talk with me, Dale Desmond. Text lines are open, 435-261-4540. We got Dr. David Blodgett, Southwest Utah Public Health Department, his monthly visit. We've been chatting about the measles outbreak a little bit. By the way, if you missed any of this, it'll be on the podcast, on the website. You can check it out, 890kdxu.com, on the I'm trying to think of the tab that's called on demand. Listen on demand tab. It's got, we'll have the whole 9 o'clock hour for you. So you can tune in and check that out with Dr. David Blodgett. For a few more minutes here as we get toward the top of the hour, I got a text here that says the magazine they're sending out, I'll personally read it, but I know tons of people that just toss it. But I bet you now it's not. It's going to be different now that they've even coming in and talking about this. This is pretty cool.
Oh, that's great. Thanks for that feedback.
I think we're gonna get a lot more people now that we can highlight it and get that anticipation coming. But is there an online version?
Yep. It's online. You can see all of our past issues, linked off the website. So just go to our website, swuhealth.org. And, I think we've got,
that's
20,
easy.
20 years now worth of, maybe 15 years worth of magazines.
You can read all to your heart's content. All right. We talked a little bit earlier this hour about, the vaccines. I've never gotten a flu vaccine. I've never gotten a flu shot ever. I've always felt like I'm not in that risk area. What do you say to people that say, oh, I don't need it, or, I'm in my late 40s. I'm thinking I'm getting to that point where I probably want to do that, but I don't feel like I'm in that what do you guys call it when you're in the risk factor or the high risk group. I don't feel like I'm in a high risk group. Is it something I should be getting anyway, even though I'm not in that risk area?
Yeah, so in a typical flu year, the people most at risk from flu are the very young and the very old.
Okay.
So there's actually three reasons to get vaccinated, not just one. So sure. One is, am I going to die from the vaccine?
Right.
Two.
Die from the vaccine.
Not from the vaccine. No, I'm sorry. Yeah, from the flu itself.
Yeah. I don't want to start a war here.
Yeah. No. I'm thinking of my next point.
Yes. Then, right. So okay. Go ahead.
Second is this disease bad when I get it?
Uh huh.
Right.
How bad is it? Right.
And so. So for flu, you're out for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I had the flu in medical school, and I was, talking to the wall, and it was rough.
Pretty kooky.
I resolved after that.
I still do it, but that's a totally different thing.
I don't want to get this disease ever again, right? And then the third is, well, if I do get it, maybe I can suffer through, and I don't mind being out of work for a week or two, but. Who am I going to pass it to? Who would get it if I have it?
Okay, that's something to think about, right?
And I think that's the part of the equation that people forget, right? They say, I don't need it because I don't care if I go to the hospital for measles or flu or whatever. That's no big deal for me. I can do that. But you always got to, there's this societal good, the part of a vaccine that you just put in your thought process where you say, you know what? I've got grandkids that are 6 months, right? And they're the ones that do the most poorly with flu, or something like that. Or I've got elderly grandparents that just...
that I'm interacting with on... Right.
So, 35, 40, 60, 80, depending on the year, 1,000 people die every year from flu in the United States.
Yeah.
It's not... There's not very many causes of death that eclipse that. Heart disease, cancer, but flu is the number one cause of infectious disease death, but it's in the top 10 causes of death always.
Okay.
And so just something to put into your consideration.
What is there an age, where you go, well, if you're over the age of blank, you definitely should be getting the flu shot?
I think for most people you'd say over 65 is a line where you say, just get it. But if you have an underlying health condition at all, which is now, 60% of us are overweight, it's hard to...
What are you looking at me for? He was looking right at me when he said that. Jeez.
Just looking at you in general.
I know.
So it's hard to find people that don't have some underlying health condition. And so I just... It's... it's universally available. It's super cheap. It's just something to consider.
Something to think about. Okay. When my son was little, he's 20 now, and he's a, you know, he's good, tall, strong looking, good looking kid. If I do say so myself, he had RSV when he was about 3 months old.
Oh, man.
And I always thought that RSV was something just for babies, but it's really not. I mean, it's really, is that something new, or has it always been that way where it's a disease or a virus that affects people of all ages?
Right. So this gets back to that susceptibility.
Okay.
Issue. So the people that do worse with RSV, the kids that can die, are those little tiny ones that are born in the winter, and they get in. So you've had that. It's a harrowing thing, right?
It was
a lot
scary.
Of times they end up in the ICU.
He was.
And they're on a ventilator.
It was, right? The whole thing.
And so it's really crazy. And so that's what you tend to think about. But the reality is, after you've had that initial infection, and it's so ubiquitous that most people get it, then you've got a lifetime of still getting that, and it looks much less. So it's part of the cold and flu season scenario, right? The dozens of various things that circulate. But then when you get older again, it comes back to being, well, it can put you back in the hospital and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And so I don't think we've done a good job of talking about that. But, like, so COVID is a coronavirus.
Right.
There's 5 other coronaviruses that circulate every year. Put people in the hospital. Probably 20% of hospitalizations in cold and flu season are coronaviruses of some sort. And RSV certainly fits into that realm. It's just those little kids that really, really struggle. And,
but there,
and it's
is
really
there
scary.
Is there any kind of a vaccine for RSV, or is it just a mutation of a flu virus? Or I've heard it was like just a really bad cold that kids can't handle or whatever.
It's a separate bug. Separate respiratory syncytial virus. So it's not flu mutated or anything like that. It's a different actual bug, and it has a different profile to where, it's just little kids. Really impacts them, and so you don't. You don't think about it in later in life, but man, it's terrifying. If you have a kid born, you know, in this winter season, and they're really young, when it's going around and you get that, it's really, really, really scary.
It was really scary. He would go into coughing fits, and his oxygen level would drop, and the machines would all beep, and my wife would, so she just, it was a hard time, but he made it through all right. And luckily, the grace of God, things worked out.
So let me answer your other question.
Yes.
There are there are two ways that RSV is being addressed from a kind of vaccine standpoint. One is by giving the mother, if the mother has antibodies, they can transfer that to the baby for the first 6 months, right? So you can vaccinate the mother. There's a new vaccine. There's a kind of a pseudo vaccine they call it passive immunity, where you give the baby immunity through the mother.
Wow. So how new is that? Is that something that's
just within the last year or two?
Wow. And what's it called? Put you on the spot.
Sorry.
It's the RSV
it's
vaccine.
It's called the RSV. It's an RSV antibody.
Antibody. Okay.
And then for adults, for older people, there's an RSV vaccine. So if you're a grandparent and you don't want to get it for yourself, or you don't want to transfer it to kids over 65, there's a vaccine that you could get.
I love it. A couple more minutes here. We've got with Dr. David Blodgett, the Southwest Utah Public Health Department. I got a text that wants to get into ask about supplements, asking what supplements you take, but more of, like, just supplements. What are things people should be looking at if they're looking at taking dietary or health supplements going into this new year? Does it depend on the person, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's something you got to research. The part of the problem I think people are having is there's a lot of claims around supplements.
Yeah.
And a lot of them not very verified. You got to be really careful. There is a good website that's designed almost for this, right? So the National Center for Complementary Medicine is actually a division of NIH. So it has vetted, accredited articles where they'll go through and they'll look at claims made by
It's kind of a Mythbusters for supplements. Yeah.
Or even, you know, provide information on what it looks like and give you kind of a current state of the science kind of thing. And so there are certain vitamins, minerals that are just well established to do good things, right? So one of the ones that always pops top of mind for me is magnesium.
Okay.
It's involved in 400 different biochemical mechanisms in your body, and almost the entirety of the American population is deficient in magnesium. We just don't get enough of it, and so it can impact diabetes, it can impact cancer risk, it can impact your ability to exercise and function, leg cramps. There's just this wide swath that it does, and almost nobody gets enough magnesium. So paying attention to magnesium is good.
You don't want to overdo it, obviously, but you want to have a good amount in your system. Look for something that's high in magnesium.
Right. It's hard to overdose on magnesium because tends to have a a laxative effect, and so
if
you're taking too much,
you'll know it
because you're in the bathroom too much.
Okay,
but right around 400 milligrams a day seems to be a.
Are there foods that are high in magnesium?
Yes, spinach, leafy greens, vegetables,
Popeye,
stuff like that.
All right.
But it really is difficult to get to that kind of 400 milligram level just through the diet. So
that's why Popeye looked so angry all the time. He was in the bathroom too much. I think that's the problem. I think what happened with Popeye. He was always fighting with people. And he was smoking a pipe. That was the other part of it. He's Dr. David Blodgett for his monthly visit from the Southwest Utah Public Health Department. Dave, thanks for stopping in.
It's great to be here. Here's to good 2026, everybody.
All right. You bet. Watch for that magazine coming out next month. We're looking forward to it. Watch for your, and then real quick, the website one more time.
At SWU Health.